Imagine you spend, I don't know, years building your absolute dream house.
Right, getting everything perfect.
Exactly. You pick out the perfect furniture, you wire up the state-of-the-art entertainment system, you stock the fridge. It is completely yours.
That's pretty ideal.
It does, right. Except, well, there's a catch. Someone else, like a landlord living hundreds of miles away, holds the only master key.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not great.
No. And without any warning, they can just, remotely change the locks, turn off your power, or just decide they're going to bulldoze your living room to build a toll booth.
Yeah, just completely pull the rug out.
Exactly. That feeling of powerlessness, that illusion of ownership just vanishing the moment someone flips a switch on a server somewhere, that is exactly what's binding together all the tech and gaming news this week.
It really is the central theme right now.
It totally is. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a fascinating stack of sources today, anchored by the Tekken Night Hot recap from July 19th, 2026. And we're also pulling in some really heavy-hitting reports from Wired, Kotaku, Mashable, and Cointelegraph. Because honestly, we're looking at a massive battle for control over your digital life.
Which is something that affects literally everyone listening.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this because the decisions being made in these like trillion-dollar corporate boardrooms right now, they are directly dictating your everyday experiences.
Yeah, we are essentially watching an entire industry actively shed its old skin.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and I mean, the stakes here are incredibly high because there is this massive divergence in philosophy happening in real time.
Right.
You have some mega corporations that are frantically building higher walls, locking the gates to their ecosystems, while others are aggressively tearing those same walls down to become foundational infrastructure.
And everyday users like you listening right now are caught directly in the crossfire of this whole transition.
Completely in the crossfire.
So let's start with probably the most visceral example of those walls getting higher, which is the massive round of layoffs over at Microsoft's Xbox division.
Yeah, that was a huge shock to the industry.
Totally. According to this really detailed report from Kotaku, and oh, there was this pretty explosive investigative video by that gaming analyst, Shooter
Oh,
Historian.
yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, so basically, Microsoft just unceremoniously fired the key creative visionaries behind like one of the most innovative, award-winning shooters of the last decade.
It's wild because this was a studio whose name Microsoft used to parade around when they first bought them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They love showing them off, and now they're just completely gutted. Why is that happening?
Well, to understand the mechanics behind a decision like that, you really have to look past the individual game, and look at Microsoft's macro-level strategy.
Okay, so the bigger picture.
Right. They are executing this overwhelming pivot toward the Game Pass subscription model
Yeah.
and, highly monetizable live service games.
Because, I mean, over the past few years, Microsoft went on this insane multi-billion dollar acquisition spree, right?
Yeah, absorbing massive publishers like Activision Blizzard, Bethesda.
Right, but I guess acquiring a studio and actually organically managing its creative output, those are two entirely different skill sets.
Precisely. And Microsoft is clearly failing at the really complex task of integrating these studios.
Because you aren't just buying an IP, you're buying hundreds of human beings.
Exactly. Human beings with established workflows, proprietary game engines, their own distinct studio
Yeah.
cultures. And when you mash all those distinct corporate cultures together, you generate massive technical and managerial debt.
Oh, I bet.
So to balance the ballooning costs of those acquisitions against a slowing subscription growth rate, they have to cut overhead.
So the acclaimed single-player narrative-driven projects just get canceled?
Yep, canceled, and the top talent gets laid off.
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting to me. It's like a mega corporation buying a beloved Michelin star restaurant, right?
Okay, I like this analogy.
They get their hands on the secret recipes, they own the branding, and then they fire the head chef just to turn the place into a subscription-based fast food drive-through. Like, does this mean taking creative risks is basically career suicide now?
Honestly, your analogy is close, but it's actually worse.
Worse. How?
It's like they bought the restaurant, fired the chef, but kept the menu prices exactly the same while substituting all the ingredients with sawdust.
Oh, wow. That is brutal.
But it's true. It sends a chilling message to the whole industry. Like Shooter Historian pointed out in his video, if creating a critically acclaimed masterpiece doesn't protect you from the chopping block to appease impatient shareholders,
Then why bother?
exactly. developers will simply stop taking risks.
Right, and then you just end up with a market totally saturated with safe, repetitive games designed purely to extract microtransactions.
Yeah. It turns an entertainment medium into a soulless machine of mergers and acquisitions.
But then right next to that totally depressing reality, we have Valve.
Yes.
Yeah. And Valve is doing something that completely breaks all the rules of traditional console hardware.
They really are.
We have this report from Rock Paper Shotgun detailing Valve's newly announced console, the Steam Machine, and their big strategy. Zero funded exclusives. None.
Which is wild. And what's fascinating here is how Valve is inverting the traditional console playbook entirely.
Yeah, because historically, to sell hardware, you need a system seller, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nintendo has Mario, Sony has God of War. Mm. You spend hundreds of millions of dollars developing a walled garden exclusive just to force people to buy your specific piece of plastic.
Right, your console.
But Valve is looking at their massive 20-year archive of open PC games and essentially saying, that is our exclusive.
Which means they want to just drag the entire open PC ecosystem straight into the living room.
Yep.
But wait, I mean, hardware is notoriously low margin. A lot of times it's sold at an outright loss.
Oh, almost always at a loss initially.
Right. So even as a private company, Valve still has a bottom line. How do they survive without a flashy new system seller to drive immediate hardware adoption?
Because they aren't trying to make money on the hardware itself.
Oh, right. The storefront.
Exactly. Valve takes a roughly 30% cut of every game sold on the Steam storefront. Their only real goal is to remove the friction between you and that storefront.
So they're acting as a bridge, not a walled garden.
Perfectly said.
Yeah.
And the technical mechanism making this possible, Linux, along with their Proton compatibility layer.
Okay, let's get into Proton, because honestly, it sounds like black magic to me.
It really does feel like it sometimes.
How are they getting games built exclusively for Windows to run perfectly on a Linux console without the original developers having to change a single line of code?
So Proton essentially acts as a real-time translator.
Okay.
When a Windows game tries to talk to the computer's graphics card,
yeah,
which is usually using Microsoft's proprietary DirectX software,
right,
Proton intercepts that command in real time and translates it into Vulkan.
And Vulkan is?
It's an open-source graphics API that Linux actually understands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they proved this translation layer worked seamlessly with the handheld Steam Deck years ago, and now they're scaling it up for home theaters.
And because they aren't publicly traded, they don't have to generate some flashy quarterly financial report to appease shareholders.
Exactly. They possess this rare luxury of playing the long game. They don't need to lock you in. They just need to provide the most open platform.
And that structural freedom is such a breath of fresh air. But I think it really highlights the friction we are seeing with the tech giants that are publicly traded.
Oh, definitely.
Because while Valve might be playing the benevolent long game, companies like Google are aggressively squeezing their ecosystems right now to maximize profits.
Yeah, they're pulling all the levers they can.
We've got a Wired report detailing Google's totally new pricing structure for the commercial use of their Gemini AI API, specifically the Pro and Ultra versions.
Right.
And it is sending absolute shockwaves through the startup community.
Because it's a classic Silicon Valley bait and switch maneuver.
Oh, totally.
Google initially entered the generative AI space offering loss-leading, hyper-aggressive pricing.
Right, basically giving it away.
Yeah, they subsidized the massive compute cost of their API to lure developers away from competitors like OpenAI and just capture market share.
But now that thousands of startups have built their entire business models on the assumption of cheap Google AI,
Google is pulling the rug out.
Yeah.
They are normalizing prices to cover the staggering operational costs of their server farms and GPU clusters.
And it's not even just a flat price hike, which would be bad enough. They are moving to a dynamic token model.
Which sounds incredibly opaque.
It does. Like, if a startup feeds a 10-minute video into Gemini for analysis, how does Google even calculate the bill for that?
That is exactly the problem. In a dynamic token model, the AI dynamically decides how much processing power it needs based on the complexity of the content.
Wait, what does that mean in practice?
Well, if the video is just a static shot of a person talking, the AI might only extract and process one frame per second.
Okay, that makes sense.
But if it's a high-action sports clip, it might process 30 frames per second to really understand what's happening. And each frame extracted costs a certain number of tokens.
Hold on. So if a developer builds an app that allows users to upload videos for AI analysis, that developer has literally zero way of predicting what their server costs will be at the end of the month.
Correct. The compute cost is entirely dependent on the variable complexity of whatever the user happens to upload.
That's insane.
It is. Startups are getting hit with devastating multi-$1,000 surprise bills because they just couldn't accurately forecast their token usage.
Oh my God. And Google's response was, what, to quietly roll out a Band-Aid solution?
Basically. In the Cloud Console, they now allow users to set daily spending limits that automatically sever API access if they go over.
Which is an insane solution for a functioning business.
Yeah, it really is.
That just means a startup's app might suddenly stop working in the middle of a Tuesday afternoon just because someone uploaded a really complicated video of a car chase.
Exactly. It proves that the golden era of cheap AI is officially dead. But honestly, it also exposes how vulnerable we all are to server-side dependencies.
Which brings us to arguably the most ridiculous story of the day.
Yes.
Because this over-reliance on centralized servers doesn't just bankrupt startups. It actively breaks things for everyday users.
Big time.
So this morning, millions of people woke up to find that YouTube's picture-in-picture mode on both iOS and Android was just completely broken globally.
Yeah, a total blackout of the feature.
Right. According to 9to5Mac and Reddit, if you tried to minimize YouTube to text someone, the video just stopped playing.
Even for premium subscribers.
Right. People paying a hefty monthly fee for that exact feature.
And, you know, independent developers quickly dug into the network traffic to find the root cause. And it is deeply telling. Yeah, this wasn't an app update you downloaded from the App Store. This was caused by a botched server-side update.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Google was trying to optimize the underlying code responsible for dynamic ad rendering on their servers.
So what does this all mean for you and me? We pay a hefty subscription, yet a single line of faulty code meant to optimize ads instantly breaks our phones.
Pretty much.
It's like a mechanic trying to fix the radio in your car and somehow they accidentally sever the brake lines because the wiring is all inexplicably tangled together.
That's a great way to put it.
Why is the ad delivery system so deeply tied to a premium user's core video player functionality anyway?
Because in modern monolithic app architectures built by these tech giants, the advertising API is the beating heart of the platform.
Wow.
It is over-integrated into every single state the video player can be in. So when they tweak the ad logic, they inadvertently destroy the API call associated with background playback on mobile operating systems.
Are we essentially just renting our own devices from servers hundreds of miles away at this point?
We really are.
Right.
And this incident just highlights the extreme fragility of centralized closed ecosystems.
And it completely erodes trust. When you break a paid feature, user loyalty just evaporates.
Instantly. People don't just sit around patiently waiting for a fix.
No, they immediately migrate to ad blockers and unofficial, modified third-party clients, which ultimately causes long-term damage to Google's own ecosystem.
Exactly. The cost of that fragility is user rebellion.
So hearing all this, I mean, a lot of people just throw their hands up and say, you know what, let's leave the centralized web entirely. Let's just embrace the wild west of the decentralized crypto space.
Right. The promise of Web3.
Exactly. But our sources show that total freedom has its own terrifying nightmares.
It really does.
There's this severe warning from Kaspersky, published via Cointelegraph, about a highly organized state-sponsored level malware framework called Shadowchain.
This thing is nasty.
It sounds it. And it is actively targeting crypto investors and decentralized exchange users through Discord and Telegram phishing links.
Yeah. And Shadowchain is a remarkable piece of engineering.
How so?
Well, it operates completely silently. This isn't your standard ransomware from, you know, 2017 that locks your screen and demands a Bitcoin ransom.
Right.
It is a modular framework designed for what cybersecurity analysts call a clipping attack.
Okay, so this isn't a typical smash and grab. It's like a burglar secretly living inside your walls, silently watching your daily routine, tracking your movements.
Very much so.
And just waiting for the exact split second you turn your back to swap out your bank account numbers before you hand a check to the teller.
Yes.
So how does a clipping attack actually work in practice? I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
So it exploits the fact that cryptocurrency wallet addresses are incredibly long, complex strings of alphanumeric characters.
Right. Nobody types those out manually.
Exactly. You always copy and paste them. The Shadowchain malware sits silently on your system and actively monitors your clipboard.
Oh, man.
The moment you highlight and copy a legitimate wallet address, the malware detects the specific format of that text string.
And then?
In the millisecond before you hit paste, it replaces the address in your clipboard with the hacker's wallet address.
And because the address is like 50 random characters long and it happens instantly, you don't even notice the change when you paste it into the destination field.
You just click confirm.
But wait, what about two-factor authentication? Almost every major crypto wallet requires a secondary confirmation on your phone or a hardware key before moving funds.
This is where the modularity of Shadow Chain becomes truly terrifying.
Okay.
It doesn't even try to break the encryption of your two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
It uses the DOM, the document object model of your web browser.
What does it do with it?
It injects a pixel-perfect fake visual layer right over your actual MetaMask or Trust Wallet extension window.
Wait, really?
Yes. It uses social engineering on your screen. You think you are typing your Google Authenticator code into your wallet to authorize a legitimate transfer.
But you're not.
Nope, you're actually typing it straight into the hacker's command and control server.
That is bone-chilling. Over $45 million in digital assets have already been stolen and laundered through automated mixing services this way.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really highlights the fundamental flaw of the decentralized finance space right now.
Which is?
The entire burden of security rests entirely on the shoulders of the end user.
Because there's no central bank to call to reverse the transaction.
Exactly. There is no fraud department to flag a suspicious overlay.
You are completely on your own. Extreme cyber hygiene is literally your only defense.
It is.
You have to ignore the free airdrops on Telegram, refuse unknown browser extensions, and meticulously verify the first and last five characters of any wallet address on your physical screen before confirming.
Because in an era of AI-assisted social engineering, the hackers are moving much faster than traditional security firms can patch the holes.
It just requires a level of constant, exhausting vigilance that the average consumer is simply not prepared for.
No, not at all.
So we are stuck between corporate walled gardens that break our apps and malware-infested open fields that drain our wallets.
It's quite the dilemma.
It is. But there is a third option we are seeing play out globally right now.
Ah, yes.
It's users actively hijacking the existing internet infrastructure to benefit themselves. And the ultimate test of that is happening tonight with the 2026 World Cup final.
It is going to be an incredible matchup.
Oh, absolutely. You have the modern, high-paced tiki-taka system of the Spanish national team going up against the reigning champions, Argentina.
Right, who rely on this brilliant blend of aggressive team cohesion and individual genius.
It's going to be a bloodbath on the pitch, but according to Mashable, the real battle is actually happening on the back end.
Yep, the network infrastructure.
Millions of fans are actively bypassing the incredibly expensive 4K pay-per-view packages being pushed by Fox Sports and FuboTV.
Yeah, and the trick here is completely legal, but it requires being smart about how you route your digital footprint.
Right, because national broadcasters in the UK, like BBC iPlayer, and in Australia, like SBS On Demand, they're streaming the match for free to their citizens.
So fans globally are using highly reputable virtual private networks, or VPNs, to spoof their IP addresses and tunnel directly into those national streams.
It is a brilliant grassroots workaround against regional price gouging.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it introduces a massive technical challenge for the internet's backbone.
Right. Okay, so we have millions of fans globally trying to spoof their location and route into a single UK server.
Yes.
If a tiny YouTube ad update crashed phones globally this morning, won't this massive influx just melt the internet? Are we really ready for this?
It is a very real concern. It's what network engineers actually call the thundering herd problem.
The thundering herd. I love that term.
It fits perfectly. This match is essentially a colossal stress test for the world's global content delivery networks, or CDNs, like Cloudflare and Akamai.
Okay, and those are?
These are the massive server farms that sit between the BBC's origin server and the end viewer.
Got it.
When the referee blows the starting whistle, millions of TCP connection requests hit those edge servers at the exact same millisecond.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the servers don't just run out of bandwidth, they run out of CPU cycles just trying to assign IP addresses and manage the handshake protocols.
Because they'll be transferring petabytes of data simultaneously.
Exactly.
So if you are a fan trying to watch this tonight without your stream buffering into oblivion, how do you actually survive the bottleneck?
A technical advice is twofold. First, log into the stream at least 30 to 45 minutes before kickoff.
Right. You want to establish your connection well before the thundering herd arrives at minute zero.
Exactly. Second, go into the video player settings and aggressively lock the video resolution to auto. Do not force it to 4K.
Wait, really? Why does auto matter so much if my home internet speed is already super fast?
Because the bottleneck isn't your home internet, it's the CDN's outbound pipeline.
Oh, I see.
By setting it to auto, you enable variable bitrate streaming. You are actively giving the CDN permission to seamlessly downgrade your video quality from 4K to 1080p or even 720p during sudden global bandwidth spikes.
And if you don't?
If you force it to 4K, the server simply drops your TCP connection entirely when it gets overloaded, and you miss the goal.
Wow. That is an incredible look under the hood of how the internet actually functions under pressure.
It is pretty fascinating.
So, looking at everything we've covered today from this July 2026 snapshot, our sources paint a picture of an industry defined by high volatility and deep distrust.
Absolutely.
The Tech & Night recap actually points out that the current market sentiment index for the gaming and tech sector is sitting at a dismal 35 out of 100.
That's incredibly low.
And honestly, it makes total sense. We have Valve trusting you with an open, bridge-like ecosystem, while Google and Microsoft are squeezing developers with dynamic tokens and laying off brilliant creators for short-term profit.
Right.
And then out in the Wild West, malware like Shadow Chain is preying on the decentralized web.
It's a lot to navigate. And this brings us to the most crucial takeaway for you listening right now.
Yeah.
In this chaotic environment, total dependence on a single closed ecosystem is the absolute greatest risk you can take.
Completely agree.
Whether it's relying entirely on one AI provider that can bankrupt your startup overnight, trusting your digital library to a landlord who can revoke your access, or navigating crypto without understanding the mechanics of a clipping attack.
You must become a highly intelligent, cautious consumer.
You really have to.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today, connecting a few dots from our sources that weren't explicitly linked in the news.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think about this. Microsoft is firing brilliant, proven creators to go all in on a cloud-based live service gaming future, right?
Right.
They want you streaming heavy interactive games directly from their servers to your TV.
Yeah, that's the goal.
But if the global internet infrastructure, these massive CDNs from Cloudflare and Akamai, are going to be pushed to the absolute brink of collapse tonight, just trying to stream a single one-way video of a soccer game.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Is our global infrastructure even technically capable of supporting the interactive, zero-latency, cloud-only gaming future these mega corporations are trying to force us into?
That is a very good question.
Or are they building a massive digital fortress on a foundation of sand?
It certainly raises a profound question about the physical limits of our network technology versus the limitless promises being sold to investors.
Exactly. Something to think about as you watch the match tonight, hopefully with your resolutions safely set to auto.
Definitely.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep questioning who holds the master keys to your digital house, and we will see you next time.